is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, oh boy, President Obama, the National Prayer Breakfast. First of all, he says, hey, to the Dalai Lama, China is hysterical about this. But perhaps more consequentially, the president, this is actually a really big deal. The president is refusing to legitimize ISIS and Boko Haram and other groups like them, Al-Qaeda, by calling them Muslim. Now, consider that for a moment. These groups are claiming their legitimacy in the name of religion. They're saying, according to the Quran, according to Islamic writing and Islamic scholars, they're saying what we are doing is consistent with Islam. And, over a billion Muslims around the world are saying, no, it's not. What's consistent with Islam is, you go to work, you get a paycheck, you raise your family, you raise your kids, you become a good citizen. I mean, just like the same for a billion Christians around the world, the same for, I don't know how many Buddhists there are or whatever, but. And this just makes sense. That to call. To call these terrorists, who are, as the president correctly asserted, members of a death cult, to call them Islamic terrorists is like calling Jim Jones a Christian leader. I mean, yeah, he used Jesus to justify giving Kool-Aid and killing all those people down there in Guyana, but does that, or I guess it changed its name to something after that, but or around that time, but that, does that mean that Christianity is all about giving, poisoned Kool-Aid to people? Hitler promoted his genocide of Jews, quoting Martin Luther. Martin Luther, the founder one of the two major branches of Protestantism, the other being the Church of England that was founded by King Henry VIII when the Catholic Church would not allow him to get rid of one of his wives. So he said, okay, that's it. I'm going to start my own church. So you've got the Anglican Church, that Protestant Church. And then you've got the Reformation Church. Martin Luther, wrote his list of demands and outrages against the Christian Church, against the Catholic Church, and nailed it to the door of the church in, I think it was Bayreuth or Kronach. It was one of those towns around there. And Martin Luther said, and I quote, "We are at fault in not avenging all this innocent blood of our Lord and the blood of the children, Jews, have been shed since then, which still shines forth from their eyes and their skin. We are at fault in not slaying them." Martin Luther calling for killing of the Jews. Because, of course, the Jews killed Jesus, right? Actually, I thought it was the Romans. The Jews did not do crucifixion 2,000 years ago. That was the Romans. But, Martin Luther didn't apparently know that. Or if he did, he chose to ignore it. And the Nazis, hey, do we call the Nazis Christian terrorists? I mean, they killed 6 million Jews. I mean, not to mention, gays and communists and Christians. And certainly they went after, minority religion. Well, Judaism, Islam. Or how about the Ku Klux Klan? The Ku Klux Klan is the oldest terrorist group in the United States. It's probably one of the largest. And the Ku Klux Klan will go out of their way to tell you, we're just good Christians. We just want to be around white people, that's all, but we're just good Christians. And yet for you know, a couple hundred years in the United States, they have engaged in serious terroristic activity. So, yeah, there are Christian terrorists. They continue to operate in the United States. Eric Rudolph is, you know, one of the more recent, you know, blew up a gay bar, blew up the Atlantic Olympics, killed somebody. People shooting abortion doc. I mean, we have Christian terrorists in the United States. But here's the thing. We tend not to call them Christian terrorists because by doing so, you legitimize their terrorism. In other words, their terrorism has some excuse. It is rooted in some religion. A more appropriate thing to call them is criminals, thugs, killers. And that's what the president is doing. He's saying, you know, I'm not going to dignify Boko Haram and ISIL by calling them Muslim. And people say, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's Muslims who are killing everybody. It's Muslims that they're killing. The vast majority of people who have been killed by ISIS and Boko Haram have been Muslims. They're just not the right Muslims. These are Sunni groups. They're killing Shia. And then they're killing everybody else. But this is not Islamic terrorism. This is terrorism that tries to justify itself in the name of Islam. You know, Maggie Thatcher didn't refer to the IRA as a Catholic terrorist group, even though they tried to kill her. It just boggles my mind. You know, how this and here's. So, you know, I would say that if you are condemning the president for not referring to ISIS and Boko Haram and other groups like this, Al-Qaeda, as Muslim terrorists, if you're condemning him for that, what you are arguing for is that these groups be recognized as having a legitimate religious basis. In other words, you're doing their work, right? I mean, that's their claim. Hey, it's legitimate. It's in the Bible. It's, you know, it's the KKK claim. Oh, yeah, we can kill black people. That's in the Bible. We can have slaves. It's in the Bible. Keeping in mind that the KKK began when we had slaves in the United States. They began as part of the slave patrol movement in the South. So who are these people who are speaking lovingly on behalf of Boko Haram and ISIS? Well, you got Joe Scarborough. Joe Scar says that what Obama said was, quote, just stupid and dumb, like something drunk uncle sitting around the table would say. Right. Steve Doocy over at Fox, so-called news, he said Obama essentially said Christians were just as bad as ISIS. No. What he said was terrorists will claim Christianity. Terrorists will claim Islam. They're all terrorists. Let's stop attaching these religious words to them. Gretchen Carlson, Obama wants to bring Christianity into the fight. And then Laura Ingram, he wants to make clear that the Christians are evil, too, because he wants Americans to do penance for the past. No, he never said any of that stuff. Come on. Stop doing ISIS's work for them. And why is it that all these people are affiliated, with the exception of Rush Limbaugh, with Fox News? Eric Bolling, Obama won't say Muslim extremism, yet he indicted the whole Christian faith. Eric Erickson, Obama's speech was reeking with contempt for Christianity. The Daily Caller, Obama at National Prayer Breakfast. Well, yeah, Christians are jerks too. No, it's not what he was saying. What he was saying was terrorists invoke the name of whatever religion is convenient for them. We should not allow them to do that.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Alan West, Fox contributor. Obama tried to conflate Christianity with ISIS. No, it's the opposite, you idiots. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Mike, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network in Taneyville, Missouri. Am I saying that right, Mike?
Yeah, Taneyville, yeah, you got it. That's pretty darn close there,
okay.
Mr. Tom.
So what's up, Mike?
Well, I watch you an awful lot, and I haven't donated nothing yet, but I've got, as soon as the business gets better, I will.
Thank you.
I learned an awful lot from you. And it's about the, and you're on the same lines of what you're talking about with Republicans talking about both sides of their mouth, you know, mm-hmm. claiming to be Christian. Mm-hmm. And my example is we were hired as a group. I'm an entertainer and a musician. We were hired as a group to go down to Texas, and I won't name the evangelist, but we were hired to go down there and dedicate his jet airplane to his evangelism. And we were in a hangar of over 300 people, you know, with dinner tables set up and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was obvious, you know, everybody was right-wing Republican staunch. And who was waiting on them? The people right over the border.
They had basically undocumented workers.
Oh yeah, and how many of them might not have been legal? Yeah. But and I'm not saying legal or illegal or whatever. I'm not going down that. But how hypocritical is that?
Yeah. Well, it seems like America from our founding and to this day has always been a stratified society. We always have people at the bottom. It's interesting. I was driving by they're building the Black History Museum here in Washington, D.C., which they finally got around to. I mean, it's ironic. We have a Native American museum. We certainly have a White History Museum, but no Black History Museum. So that's being built. And as I was driving by it, I was looking at the construction workers, and a lot of them were Hispanic, at least the guys out near the street that I could see. And I was reflecting on that and the fact that most of the older buildings in this town, including the White House, were built by slave labor. I mean, they were literally built by slaves. And so it's like, the bottom used to be slaves. Now it's undocumented people from Latin and Central and South America. And it's like, our society seems to always have to have somebody at the bottom of the pile.
The Freedom Hall. I was just there in your city, your fair city, with a bunch of kids from the Ozarks playing fiddle.
Oh, really? Where?
Yeah. We were invited to play at the East Wing in the White House.
How cool is that?
We had the youngest was 14 and the oldest was 17, and we played for 2 hours and probably had about 2,000 people walk through the Christmas room. You know how they had the Christmas trees all set up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great thing. It's a good program. It's a nonprofit fiddle program that keeps Ozark music alive. So.
Oh, that is great. That is great. We need more of those kind of things around.
One bummer, though, Tom, is that every time I mentioned it here, we're in a pretty biased area. And every time I mentioned it to anybody, that's where we're going. The first thing they had to do is, make a slight about what color the White House was or.
You're that Black guy in the White House, you mean?
Yes. I get up and I say, did you hear what I said? We're taking kids to the White House to play in our capital.
Yeah. I think that even many African Americans do not realize the depth of white racism when it comes to this president. It is astonishing, particularly in the central and southern states. Mike, thank you for the call, and good on you. We'll be right back, 20 minutes past the hour. So, what we're really talking about here? I mean, this really has nothing to do with religion, with Islam, with Christianity, with any of that kind of thing. What this really has to do with is something called Obama derangement syndrome, which really should be in the diagnostic and statistical manual of the American Psychiatric Association, the DSM. We're up to what, DSM-5 now, I think. Maybe they should come out with 5R revised and add Obama derangement syndrome to it. The only thing is that conditions typically only make their way into the DSM when there's a pharmaceutical to deal with them, because it's the psychiatry rather than the psychology profession. In psychiatry, you see a psychiatrist to get pills. You see a psychologist to get therapy, generally speaking. I mean, there are obvious exceptions to both, but that's pretty much the case. And what we're looking at here is a mental illness. It's a mental illness born out of racism, out of hysteria, and out of an enormous amount of money coming from a bunch of right-wing billionaires who don't, it's not that they don't like Obama. It's that they don't like the government regulating them or taxing them. And Obama happens to be the guy in the White House. So they know that there's a bunch of white racists out there. So, hey, let's exploit those idiots. You have the headline on Drudge, terrible deeds in the name of Christ, and a picture of Obama with a big smile on his face. Right. In fact, here's the story. Conservative radio host Obama was acting like a secret Muslim at prayer breakfast on the February 6th edition of the Mike Gallagher Show. Conservative radio host and Fox News contributor Mike Gallagher suggested that Obama's remarks at the national prayer breakfast were proof that the president had a mental breakdown. Gallagher went on to claim that he doesn't believe it to be true, but Obama sure acts like he's a secret Muslim when he makes such statements. You get what's going on here. President Obama, by not attaching the word Muslim to the terrorists, is denying them what they crave. Mike Gallagher, Rush Limbaugh, Joe Scarr, Steve Ducey, Gretchen Carlson, Laura Ingraham, all of them want to give these terrorists what they want. They want to give them credibility. They want to suggest that these terrorists are somehow representing Islam. And the vast majority of Muslims around the world, I mean, the vast majority of Muslims around are horrified by this. They're just like anybody else. They just, want to get through the day, have their job. And by the way, have you noticed that all this happens to be happening in or near countries that we broke? If George W. Bush had not decided that he had to have two little wars in order to get reelected in 2004, and he needed the little wars in 2003 to set up the election, and 2002, and so he invades Afghanistan and then he invades Iraq. If George W. Bush had not done that, it's arguable that there would be no ISIL. Now, yeah, I know you could say, some of that comes from our creating other failed states like Libya or, trying to take down Assad in Syria. Well, yeah, but none of that would have happened if we hadn't taken down Iraq. I mean, if you want to point to the source, what brought about these terrorists, it's the unleashing. It's the destruction of government which kept people from killing each other, the Sunnis and Shia, by and large. It's the power of government, the power of Saddam Hussein's government, the power of, you might not like their governments or agree with their governments, but it was the power of the Iraqi government, the power of the Taliban in Afghanistan that was preventing a lot of religious violence, a lot of violence based in ancient tribal and religious disputes. So if you want to call these terrorists, you could call them Bush-created terrorists. Republican-created terrorists, neocon-created terrorists. I mean, that's more accurate than calling them Muslim terrorists. Because, once again, what they're doing is not, arguably, is not part of Islam. Now, you say, oh, wait a minute, I can find a verse in the Quran that says, you should, kill other people if they don't go along with you. Well, yeah, I can find those verses in the Bible. There's pretty much an entire book devoted to it. Joshua, who, God said, go to this town and kill everybody. Then go to this town and kill everybody. Read it. Read the book of Joshua and tell me that the God that Joshua was listening to isn't a terrorist, or that Joshua wasn't. But what does that have to do with? Anyhow, my point, what does that have to do with conservatives wanting the president of the United States to give and establish credibility for terrorists in the Middle East and around the world? Why do these conservatives want to improve the standing, the credibility of these folks? The two reasons that I can come up with are, one, it's a simple, easy bumper sticker thing that you can use to bash the president, which conservatives are all about, right? They hate the guy. But the second possibility is that by taking a few thousand or tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of hardcore right-wing terrorists in the Middle East and calling them Muslim, what the right-wingers are doing are saying, no, it's not, you know, 10,000. Well, back when it was just, you know, bin Laden in Afghanistan, it was fewer than 5,000. Right? It was just a handful of people. But now it's grown thanks to George W. Bush's policy. But they get to say, well, no, it's not 10,000 or 100,000 people that we have to worry about. You know, the ISIS, a couple hundred thousand at the most. It's all of Islam. It's over a billion people. So we can really get justified in being terrified. And we can look around. Oh, look at all those Muslims in Detroit, in Dearborn. Oh, my God. You know, and look at the Muslims in New York City. And look at them. And, you know, anywhere there's a mosque or a Muslim community, we are justifying not just hatred, but hatred fueled by fear. Blind fear. That's what these right-wingers are selling.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And by promoting that fear, they are harming the United States of America. These are not patriots, these right-wingers. They're shills. Welcome back to the True People's Media, the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. Don't think so. No way. Okay, another one of the pro-ISIL conservatives. There's all these pro-ISIS conservatives out there. They all want ISIS to be acknowledged and recognized as being an Islamic organization and thereby being somehow reflective of all of Islam. And I mean, they don't want Eric Rudolph to be called a Christian terrorist. They don't want the KKK to be called a Christian hate group. But they do want ISIL to be called a Muslim terrorist organization. Here's another one. In fact, he's even wondering if by refusing to call ISIL terrorists, could President Obama be the Antichrist? Seriously.
It is astonishing that every church in the land has not risen up in anger against this man who is acting very much like the Antichrist that we read about in the Bible. Tell me what the Antichrist would be doing if he did arise in this land. Could he be doing any more at this stage of this nation than this one is doing?
I think if the Antichrist arose in this country, he'd probably show up as a right-wing talk show host. Right? In fact, maybe he has. I don't know. Who do you know, if the Antichrist is around, I mean, you know, there's this old tradition that there are 34 wise elders who hold the world together. And I'm wondering, you know, is there always a couple of antichrists floating around too? Maybe 34 of them? Let's see, how many right-wing talk show hosts are there? Yeah. Prominent ones, shall we say. So, you know, I guess an interesting question is, who do you think is the antichrist? Let's see, George W. Bush, you know, told a bunch of lies, and over 100,000 people died, over 5,000 Americans. Dick Cheney told lies, those people died. Alberto Gonzalez told lies, those people died. Condoleezza Rice told lies, those people died. Colin Powell told lies, those people died. My Antichrist list is getting bigger. Oh, well. Get your thoughts on this. Robert in Mission Viejo, California. Hey, Robert, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Yeah, I was thinking about the use of religious texts, and because I've basically decided that all those religious texts are literary Rorschach tests. And when somebody says, I read the Bible and believe it, I say, well, what do you read and what does it say to you? And when they tell me what it says, they are actually telling me who they are.
Yep, I agree. Because everything is in the Bible, just like everything's in a giant ink blot, which is the Rorschach test. And you can look at that ink blot and go, holy cow, what are those naked people doing in that room? Or you can look at that ink blot and say, oh, a whale in the clouds. I mean, you know, it's whatever. Whatever you're thinking of.
And I wanted to bring one other thing up. You know, the right wing consistently will try to misunderstand whatever President Obama says. And they define themselves in opposition. And there are all these stupid right-wing memes that big government makes us less free, for example. And I'm driving around on billions of dollars worth of roads feeling freer because of big government providing those roads. You know,
right. And you're driving in a car that's safer because of big government, and you're stopping at stoplights that keep the roads safe because of big government. You know, government needs to be big enough to hold back the power of wealthy people and corporations. The only thing that can protect average working people outside of the workplace, in the workplace it would be a union, but outside of the workplace, the only thing that can protect average working people from predation, from the predators among the billionaire class and the corporate class, is government. And our government is not big enough to protect us from the predators of the cable companies who want to screw you and jack your prices up. Our government is not big enough to protect us from the oil industry, you know, year after year after year, extracting hundreds of billions of dollars of our tax money in subsidies. It's not big enough to protect us from pharmaceutical companies that would seek to poison us and promote drugs that are unnecessary. It's not big enough to protect us from these guys, Robert.
Well, wait a minute. It would be more than big enough to do all those things if we voted, but people at the bottom don't vote.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I'm going to, and you know, people say, well, I'm not happy with the Democrats either. But you know what? There's such a thing as target selection. If you've got reliable enemies in front of you, and then you've got some unreliable friends next to you, you deal with your reliable enemies first. And then in that teachable moment, you turn to your unreliable friends and say, would you like to get it together or what? So what I'm suggesting is that the government is more than big enough. All we need to do is ask it to do what we want it to do,
yeah,
which is to protect us from repression.
Well, but see, here's the thing, Robert. We are asking that. You know, more than 80% of Americans want Social Security to be strengthened and its benefits to be expanded. More than 70% of Americans believe that Medicare is a good program and it should be extended to everybody. I mean, you know, more than half of Republicans agree with those kind of statements. You know, the vast majority of Americans believe that global warming is a real threat. The vast majority of Americans would like to see a national health care system that actually works. The vast majority of Americans would like to see our schools well-funded and functioning. None of these things are happening, though, because the Supreme Court has allowed vested interests, private interests, billionaires and big corporations to control our political process. And as Henry Wallace said, you know, they are reaching out for control of government. They already control the marketplace. And the one last thing that can regulate the marketplace is government. And if they can seize both the marketplace and government, and the Koch brothers are investing $900 million in seizing government, if they can seize both, then they can get their way. And it's Robert, thank you for the call. And it's absolutely nuts how bad it goes, how bad it is happening. For example, over at Rachel Maddow's blog, Steve Bannon writing on her MSNBC blog, the Rachel Maddow Show blog, Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam, Republican, his embrace of Medicaid expansion looks like a godsend for the state. There are 280,000 people in Tennessee who will be eligible for free health care under the Medicaid expansion. And he said he was going to do a conservative version of it. He figured out a way that some of the money can get skimmed off the top and be given to insurance companies and banksters. This is what they mean when they say a conservative version of Medicaid. And you'd think that that would make everybody happy, right? But the Koch brother-funded Americans for Prosperity said, oh, no. Poor people getting health care? Getting free health insurance? The billionaires may have to pay something toward that. We can't have that. And so, you know, here, as Steve Bannon writes, it was about the best gift Tennessee could ever be offered, a package that helped thousands of families, improved state finances, bolstered state hospitals, all at zero cost from the state. And yet last week, Republicans in the state legislature killed the whole idea. NBC's Perry Bacon Jr. reported on this fight. He says, and this is from the NBC report by Perry Bacon Jr. The Americans for Prosperity argued that Haslam was just trying to trick conservatives into implementing Obamacare in their state by giving it a new name. Americans for Prosperity campaigned aggressively that Haslam's plans for the next 6 weeks, even running radio ads blasting GOP state legislators so they might vote for it. to sell his plan. The governor toured the state over the last 2 months, stopping in 8 cities with the same message. His program could help fund hospitals and cover more than 200,000 low-income people. This is not Obamacare, he emphasized constantly, since the program would have co-pays, premiums, and other conservative ideas not in traditional Medicaid. Right? Like I said, they figured out a way to screw the poor people. Yeah, we're going to give you free health insurance, but if you get sick, you're going to have to pay something out of pocket. I realize you don't have any money, but, you know, we're conservatives. That's how we do it. We stick it to the little guy, and we give tax breaks to billionaires. But this Insure Tennessee program failed. Only 16% of people in the state opposed Insure Tennessee, but 85% of people in the state oppose Obamacare. So the Koch brothers, Bat Boys, the Americans for Prosperity, they came in and said, oh, yeah, Insure Tennessee, that's Obamacare. And the Republicans in the state legislature bought it. This is, you know, the Koch brothers live in Kansas, which is having its own problems right now, by the way, as a result of Reaganomics, Brownbeckonomics. Why are they changing the political nature of Tennessee? Oh, that's right. It's federal money, and they pay federal income taxes. Oh, my God. Stanley in West Point, Mississippi. Hey, Stanley, what's up?
I'm in a privilege, Tom. I was listening to the president the other day, my son as well, and he teaches Sunday school at the Baptist Church, and I've been a practicing Christian all my life, and I couldn't find any fault in it. I mean, theologically and biblically and historically, I found it to be pretty much correct, and I'm a 57-year-old white male here in Mississippi, and I think the president's done a pretty good job considering what all he's been up against. I'm a little disappointed in his economic deal with the banks and putting some of those guys in his cabinet, but all in all, he's a lot better than the Republicans would have been, and I just don't understand. Even my brother, who's a lifelong Democrat, and he is wealthy, but last time I visited with him, he started Obama bashing.
Huh.
I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. They've gotten through to him as well, and but I think I got him straight on it, Tom. And you know, I'm just worried about the Ukraine situation with all those big oil contracts that they signed, and they were politically risky, geopolitically very risky when they signed those contracts, and they oust a democratically elected leader out, and you know, we're just fighting for big oil all over again. And this is Russia. This is not Afghanistan or Iran.
Right. Yeah, it concerns me tremendously, too. Stanley, thank you for the call, and thanks for sharing your perspective with us. We'll be back with more of your thoughts on who are the real terrorists after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And a quick heads up, my newest book, Death in the Pines, a novel that has to do with GMOs, is just out. And Crash of 2016 is out in paperback. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Gary in Spokane, Washington, watching Free Speech TV on Comcast. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Yeah, it's about religion. I really don't believe that they are. In fact, I believe that those terrorists out there, they're against every religion, actually. Most, if not all religions, especially the Islams and Christians, you don't go out and kill people. You don't go out and murder people. That's against the Ten Commandments. That's against every religious value that most religious people have. You can't sit there and you know, a murderer could say, oh, I'm a Christian or I'm a Muslim, but truly they're not. They're against their religion, actually. They're against all religion. Yeah. They're against ethical, everything that highly religious people, good people, you know, decent people, they're totally against them, you know. So they could fly whatever banner they want. They could call themselves whatever religion they are. But if you go out and just murdering people, you're against the Creator. You're against life. So actually you are against the Creator, because the Creator created the life, and you're taking life. So when you're murdering people, you're actually against creation and the one that actually created everything, actually. So talk about like antichrist and stuff. Well, yeah, there's perhaps an antichrist, but there's also like an anti-creator too. And people who murder, they're against the creator, period.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm totally with you. This is ahistoric, a-religious. It's not, you know, the what ISIL and Boko Haram and these other groups are doing, It you know, you may have, there may be some religious precedent, but the religious precedent is not, or excuse me, a historic precedent, but the historic precedent is not religious. It is the story of crazy people. It is the story of sociopaths, it's psychopaths, it's the story of nation states using religion as the excuse for bad behavior. And it's just plain old flat out wrong. I'm with you. Gary, thank you. Good comment. Brian, watching Free Speech TV in Seattle. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, how are you, Mr. Hartman?
I'm great.
Yeah, I've been watching your show. It's I really get a lot of powerful information out of it.
Thank you.
And it's funny, you're talking about your Republican family members. It's like my older brother. I said, and I was telling him, and the economy's doing really well. And he goes, and then he kind of poo-poos it and go, it's really not going that well. Well, you know, I read a lot of stuff. And I was reading in the Financial Times how positive economic news was for the United States economy. So, you know, Republicans, they are afraid to admit reality when it stares them in the face.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sorry.
Well, it's Obama derangement syndrome. It's a mental illness. Anything Obama does is wrong, and anything good that happens when Obama's president must be the result of Republicans or good luck, and everything
well,
Republicans.
It's ironic because I voted for Obama this election.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you, Brian. Thank you for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman program. Welcome back. John in Minneapolis. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Well, I like your question. I think that if they're not the Antichrist themselves, I think they're paving the way for the Antichrist. And by that, I mean people who are telling lies, whether they're talk show hosts or politicians or Fox News or any of these people. Yes, you can say that their actions are Antichrist, and that they may not actually be the Antichrist, but they are paving the way for the Antichrist. And also your other comment about empire, you know, the kind of religion that is associated with empire, I wish it would have died in our revolution. I think, you know, Christianity or any other religion needs to stand on its own two legs. It doesn't need to be bolstered by the state. And if they're so concerned about, you know, people turning away from religion, then what happened in Europe? I mean, you could say, you could blame a good portion of the religiosity of Europeans on the basis of religion. Everybody was on, you know, God is on our side, and they said in World War One, God is on the Russian side, God is on the Austrian side, and as a result, you know, people started to question, you know, the basis of their, you know, belief system, mm-hmm. and that's the result. I think today, the people that do believe, I think they're very sincere, but the people that don't believe for very good reasons also. But yes, as a Christian, it really bothers me when people do really awful things that are in positions of power and abuse that power and kill people and torture people and then get on television and even say, I'd do it all again. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Are you kidding?
As,
what kind
yeah.
of monster is that?
Right.
That's
well, that monster is named Dick Cheney. And yes, he is a monster. I'm with you. John, thank you for the call. Well said. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I keep hearing this, these Fox so-called newsers saying that Obama is a secret Muslim. And it just occurred to me this morning while you were talking about it, what's the point of being a secret Muslim? I mean, Muslims are not secretive about it. As a matter of fact, nobody who has a religious faith seems to be secretive about it, and least of all, Islamic terrorists are not making secrets. I don't understand the point that Obama would be of him being a secret Muslim. especially when the knock on him before he was elected was that he was in a a radical Christian church with Reverend Jeremiah Wright.
Right.
So, but you know, you were talking about. I got a couple things on the Bible here. Just two more things. The book of Joshua, chapter 6, where God recommends that Joshua kill every living thing in the city of Ai. Mm-hmm. That's Joshua chapter 6, which they did butcher every man, woman, child, and beast. And I was reading the book of Samuel last night, both books of Samuel 1 and 2, and those are the rules of holy war, that you kill everything.
Right.
You cannot take any of the spoils of war. They're all to be given to God. And so in Samuel, when Saul defeats the Philistines and captures the Philistine king Agag, he spared the king, and they took some of their livestock. And when Samuel came and saw that they had spared Agag, it says in Samuel, 1 Samuel 21:25, and Samuel hewed Agag to pieces, so hacked him to pieces with a sword. I think that's murder.
Wow.
Yeah, the other look it up. Samuel, I believe it.
Oh, I believe it.
The other thing, the Antichrist, I have to let people know, and you can come and find me and track me down if you hate me for this. I'm sure a lot of the right-wing holy war Christians will. There are six letters of the Apostle Paul, which I've long, by almost 200 years now, known to be forgeries. 2 Thessalonians is one of them. The others are 1 and 2 Timothy, Titus, Ephesians, and Colossians. You'll see that the Antichrist is only mentioned in 2 Thessalonians. And it talks about because the kingdom of heaven will not come until the emergence of an Antichrist. Now,
isn't that also in Revelation?
It's not the Antichrist.
Oh, it's the beast and the whore. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back at you, Paul. But the Antichrist talks about that it's not. See, the whole thing about Jesus and the teachings of Paul is that the kingdom of heaven is imminent. It's coming. In fact, in Mark 9:1, Jesus says, some of you standing here will not pass until the kingdom comes. And so then it didn't come.
Right.
So it didn't come right away. So in 2 Thessalonians, and if you think the idea of forgery is kind of funny, 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 2 calls 1 Thessalonians a forgery. It says, you have received a letter not from us. Well, if it's not 1 Thessalonians, what is this author talking about? And it was a German scholar, Friedrich Schleiermacher, in 1807, who first thought that 1 Timothy was not written by Paul because, number one, it has a different message than what Paul's messages are in book and epistles that they have been confirmed to be by Paul. And the writing style, which they have now analyzed quite thoroughly, would be like Paul would be a writer kind of like Mark Twain, whereas some of these others would be in the style of William Faulkner.
Right.
To confuse. You see what I mean?
Yeah. No. Yeah, I'm quite familiar with that. And some great scholarship has been done on this by Funk and others, you know, the Jesus Seminar folks.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The four Gospels, the five Gospels is an absolutely brilliant book.
Part of this came from the things they found in the Coptic Gospel of Thomas in 1945 Nag Hammadi, where they found things that were sayings of Jesus that were similar to what was in the other Gospels, but not exactly the same.
Lift a rock, I am there. Split wood, I am there. Jesus talking about basically a kind of a pantheistic worldview. Paul, thank you for the, and that's in the Book of Thomas. Paul, thank you for the call. It's always great to hear from you. Always insightful. I always learn something. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. and EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back to the second hour of our program. And I am very pleased to have in the studio with me Dr. David Hochberg. He's got a real PhD. How cool is that? I just have an honorary one. Okay. Yeah, Dr. David Hochberg, healthcare policy analyst with the National Center for Public Policy Research. Nationalcenter.org is the website. And David, in the United States, administrative costs associated with our healthcare system represent 31% of total costs, total health spending. In Canada, it's 1.3%. Aren't we being wasteful by not adopting a single-payer system like Canada has?
Well, no, because I think the greater issue is how patients fare under single-payer systems like Canada. Canada, for example, the wait time to get treatment is now up to 19 weeks, which was...
Depends entirely on the condition. If you have something that's acute in Canada, you will be seen the same day. If you have something that is long-term in the United States, you will be put on a wait list, too.
Well, so, you know, here's the website for the British Columbia that you can go to, and here is a body
surgical
chart.
Times.
You can click on the body part, and it'll tell you what
right.
the various wait times for surgery and including things like cancer treatment are in the
But the same
in
thing
Canada.
Is true in the United States.
Well,
I have a friend who just had a hip replaced. He had to wait a year for it.
And those waits are common in Canada.
They're common everywhere. You know, having
but
a hip replaced is different than having had a heart attack. If you have a heart attack in Canada, they will see you the same
But moving to single payer doesn't really solve the problem, then, does it?
Let's define the problem. The problem that I'm seeing is that Stephen J. Hemsley, the CEO of United Healthcare, has made over $1 billion as the CEO of basically a banking operation. He's a bankster. All they handle is money. He's never given a single vaccine to a single child. The guy before him, Dollar Bill McGuire, made $1.7 billion as the CEO of a health insurance company. These guys are skimming your money and my money off the top to the tune of almost a third of everything that we're spending is going into the pockets of these banksters who run these health insurance companies.
The real problem is we are giving more and more of the control of our healthcare system over to politicians.
How?
And Obamacare is the latest one. And
how? Well, I'll give you some examples of how Obamacare actually is controlling health care. They're saying to the insurance companies, no, you can't dump somebody after they've hit $1 million, like they used to have $1 million cap on it. They're saying to people, no, you can't do rescission. You can't dump somebody just because they get sick. They're saying you must allow kids up to 26 to be on their parents' policies. That's government interfering in the healthcare marketplace. It's an interference
which has resulted in much higher deductibles, skinnier networks, people having trouble keeping doctors even in their own insurance plans, as was clear in that New York Times article. No,
the problem is 31%. That's overhead going to these other and I mean you compare this to other countries: Canada, England, Scotland, Wales, France, Germany, the Netherlands.
All of which have
better outcomes, better health outcomes than the United States. They have lower infant mortality,
neither of which tells you anything about a healthcare system. There are a number of factors that influence life expectancy. The healthcare system being only one among them. On infant mortality, that is measured so inconsistently from country to country. You're supposed to count any infant that makes any attempt at breathing, basically. There are only two countries that follow that definition, Canada and the U.S. And guess which two countries have the highest rates of infant mortality? Canada and the U.S. When you look at things that the healthcare system does have more impact on, such as cancer survival rates, the 5-year survival rate, the U.S. tends to be near the top.
And we are, A, we're near the top, but B, we are also, we have more cancer than in a lot.
That.
If you have more, I'm sorry, I don't have the paper with me, but well, let's set that one aside. I can't back that up right now. But I, you know, back to this, why, what's your alternative? If Canada, England, Scotland, Wales, France, Germany, Netherlands, et cetera, if they can run a healthcare system.
They can't run a healthcare
system.
At
less than 5%. And it's costing us 31% to run our healthcare system.
This is how they do it. I mean, they end up with 3.2 million people waiting for treatment. This is direct data from the NHS from England. They have about 763,000 people waiting for diagnostic tests.
There's millions of Americans
waiting. And nearly 16,000 people who end up having their surgeries canceled in
This is true of the United States as well, David. In the UK,
it's not recommended that you have more than 62 days between the time you're diagnosed with cancer and the time you get treatment. And according to the Daily Mail, the last time they checked, 10,000 patients in the UK exceeded the 62-day standard. So that's how they keep costs down in the UK by shoving it on the sick people. And the reason they do that is because sick people don't have much political clout. They don't amount to that many people come election time. They are certainly in no condition to be protesting, organizing, and doing the things that can change public policy.
And why is it that the conservatives in England defend the National Health Service? And let's just be very clear. I'm talking about single payer. The NHS in England is a socialized system. Doctors in England work for the government.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors in Germany don't work for the government. In single payer systems, doctors are not government employees.
They're not government employees in Canada, and they still have many of the same problems with wait times and wait lists and so
Canada's
forth.
Canada's doing great. People in Canada love their healthcare system. Their most popular historic politician is, what was his name? Tommy Thompson or something like that? The guy, you know, say what? Tommy Douglas, that's right. The guy who started this thing in Saskatchewan, he's like the national hero. You're conflating
popularity with effectiveness. I mean, just because something's popular doesn't mean it's effective. No, it's not popular because it's effective. I mean, it is not effective when you have an average wait time of 19 weeks to get surgery. It's not effective for non-critical
surgery.
Well, no, according
you have
to
the same here in the United States.
According to the Fraser Institute, about 44,000 people died because they were over a 16-year period, which is about, 2700 people in a yearly, which in a country of about 30 to 35 million people because of wait times.
Well, and in the United States.
And again, I'm sure it's popular because most people don't get that sick in a year. And hence, all they know about the healthcare system is, oh, maybe I get to see a doctor.
The United States, according to Harvard University, you've got 44,000 Americans who die every year simply because they have no access to healthcare. That's not the Harvard study.
That's the study put out by the two doctors that founded the National Physicians for National Health program, which is the single payer advocacy group. If you actually look at the studies that have good study designs on the effect of mortality and health insurance has on mortality, there are five studies that say yes it do. There are four studies that say it don't.
You're trying to argue on the one hand that the Canadian system, which has some weights in it for non-critical care, is leading to death. In fact, the effects of wait time on mortality in Canada. Mm-hmm. And then, on the other hand, you're also arguing that it doesn't matter if you're insured or not. That doesn't change mortality. Really?
Yeah, actually, I am arguing that because the people who are on the waiting lists in Canada and England are actually sick. Whether or not you have health insurance is not...
What if they have no health insurance at all?
Well, they don't really have health insurance if they're on.
Then how can you say not having health insurance isn't a risk
for
death?
Because most of the people who don't have health insurance are not sick.
What does that have to do with...
It does, because you're saying there's a direct link between health insurance and mortality, and comparing that to this and to single payer, and the people who are waiting on single payer genuinely have, most of them anyways,
Quick question. Do you think Obama should have said Islamic terrorism for breakfast?
I wasn't brought in for that issue, so okay. I'm going to let that one go.
Because I've got a whole board full of calls about it. We'll be right back. Hang on.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Bob in Mesa, Arizona, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Okay, I was listening to the little conversation there about the Canadians and their supposedly inept healthcare system.
Right.
Well, I live in an RV park down here in Mesa, resort area, and it is 50% Canadians every year in and out. And I've been here for 13 years, and I've heard this same rhetoric from Republicans down here. And I tell them, well, okay, we'll win the argument. Bring me one Canadian, just one, that wants to switch with us. I've been waiting 13 years, and I still haven't seen one. I talk to them all the time. They laugh at that question.
Yeah.
Just bring me one.
Yeah, there you go. Well, maybe we can find one who's just, you know, thinks America is a paradise or something. But, I grew up in Lansing. I lived in Detroit. Lansing is like 110 miles from the Canadian border. Detroit's like 10 miles from the Canadian border, or right on it, arguably. And Louise and I lived for 10 years. I spent 27 years in Michigan, and we lived for 10 years in Vermont, in Montpelier, which is in the central northern part of Vermont. And we were about an hour and a half from the Canadian border. And I never once in my life saw a Canadian coming into the United States looking for health care. Never saw a Canadian in a doctor's office. Never saw a Canadian in a hospital. I'm not seeing dead Canadians falling all over the border. But what I did see when we lived in Montpelier was every Saturday morning, Louise and I would get up. We would walk into downtown Montpelier to have breakfast at, forgetting the name of the diner now, but there was this cool little diner in the middle of town that served scrambled tofu on Saturday mornings. We'd go down there to have breakfast, and there would be the buses where people were, and Bernie Sanders organized this when he was a member of the House of Representatives. There would be the buses of elderly Americans lining up and getting on these buses to drive up to Montreal, which was directly north of us, so that they could buy their pharmaceuticals. So Americans are certainly going to Canada. So Bob, you have not heard what do the Canadians say to you when are they still using their Canadian healthcare system?
Yes. As a matter of fact, when they get sick down here, and if it's something real serious, they'll fly back to Canada to have them taken care of, because they don't want to get stuck with the thousands and thousands of dollars in bills like we are in this country.
Right.
You've said it many times. That's the number one reason for bankruptcy in this country, and I'm living proof of that, actually. I've already gone through that due to health care and this getting over $100,000 in bills going for cardiac treatment here just a couple years ago. But they don't have that problem up there. But I'm still waiting for the first one to be brought to me by a Republican. If it's so terrible, bring me one that wants to switch, and then I'll maybe even start listening to a little bit of what you have to say. But it hasn't happened, and I've been asking that question for 13 years.
Yeah, where is the Canadian movement? I guess that's the question. I mean, for that matter, where's the American movement? Most Americans want single-payer health care systems. But what do we get? We get Americans for Prosperity. You get a phony grassroots front group for the Koch brothers that is, you know, and creepy ads with Uncle Sam, you know, with a speculum or a gloved finger, you know. And it's like, really? Why are these guys doing this? Bob, thank you for the call. Thanks very much. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. Got several calls from Tennessee. I want to get into this. What's going on in Tennessee? What just happened there where a Republican governor said, hey, let's expand Medicaid to 280,000 people. Poor people can have health care. And the Republicans in the state legislature of Tennessee said, nah, we're not going to do that. We'll be right back with your calls. Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ron in Smyrna, Tennessee. Hey, Ron, what's on your mind?
Mr. Tom Hartman, first of all, it's an honor to speak with you, sir. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
I just want to say about the message you started with talking about the Christians and that stuff. You're very much on point, man. I love the way you ran your message.
Thank you.
Getting to Tennessee. This morning I was looking at the news, and Tom, it's amazing. It's funny because when you were reading the report, I've seen a bunch of old white folks with those America for Prosperity T-shirts on. Don't tread on me, and all of them. They was making a bunch of noise because right before the decision came down, they were showing commercials on TV and stuff that, you know, that the governor accepted, and it showed that he changed it and changed the name. But the next thing you know, Tom, here we go. It's not happening.
Here's where it gets really interesting, Ron. Reporters. This is Steve Bannon writing over Rachel Maddow's blog, so I'm not sure exactly where he got this from. He said it was reported by Bacon, but I'd have to click on the link. But anyhow, what he's asked, what did the Americans for Prosperity activists have to say for themselves? And then they quote Louis Stans, a retired engineer who was part of the AFP group. He says, I'm skeptical of government-run programs. Medicare is better, and I've paid into it my whole life. So, and then as Steve Bannon notes, here's a retiree who doesn't like government-run programs, instead preferring a government-run program. In other words, an AFP activist traveled to the state capitol to condemn a conservative version of Medicaid expansion because what he really wants is a socialized system like Medicare, apparently. Actually, Medicare is not socialized. It's single-payer, too. But anyway. Yeah, Ron, thanks for sharing that with us. You're absolutely right. It was the AFP. In fact, they bust them in. I mean, the AFP has got they've got more money than God. They know what they're doing. They're making things happen. Thank you, Ron. John in Oolitawa. How do you say that in Tennessee?
That's close. It's Oolitawa. It's an Indian name.
Okay, Oolitawa. So what's up?
I'll give you a little background on the legislative vote down here. You're right. It was voted down by Republicans, but it was in a Senate committee. Of eight senators, seven of which are Republican, one Democrat. And the point I wanted to make, and you made a good segue to it a while ago, of those seven Republican senators who voted down, they have state-run health care. That's what they have for their health care provider. It's a state-run system.
Right.
Now, like you said a while ago, Medicare is better than a state, government run. Well, they've got state run. And also to add to that, I mean, they're just part-time help anyway. State legislators, but never state, just part-time.
Yeah.
But they have full coverage through the state, but they don't want 280,000 Tennesseans to have even a portion of the same. So I want to point out the hypocrisy in that.
Yeah. Well done, John. Well done. Thank you for that, and thanks for listening to Sirius there in Tennessee. Rich in Sun City, Arizona. Hey, Rich.
How you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
Well, I just, listening to your callers there shows you my point. In England, there is a British organization that did a study on the ignorance of the electorate in different countries.
Mm-hmm.
Italy beat us out.
Right.
We had the second most ignorant electorate.
Right, because 90% of Italy's entire media landscape is owned by one man, Silvio Berlusconi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the thing is that, you see, they follow Fox. They don't investigate anything. They don't analyze anything. And most of them don't even pay any attention to what's going on.
Right.
And then when they do, they get it from a different source, and depending on the source, depending on how accurate your information is.
Yeah, yeah. Fox News in the United States is much like the Berlusconi-run media in Italy, and we are both badly malinformed, not just misinformed, not just uninformed, but malinformed. We believe things that aren't even true as a consequence of that.
Yeah.
Richard, thanks. That's a great point. Tim in Tennessee, you wanted to get back to what happened with Medicaid expansion in Tennessee. Tell us about it, Tim.
Yes, Tom. Thanks for bringing it up today. What happened here last week was a real travesty, and the results of it were kind of predetermined. One of the state representatives put out a press release yesterday, John Ray Clemens, he is a state rep, and the outcome of this was predetermined. In short, the lieutenant governor stacked the deck, because this was a special session called by the governor, and this was voted down just in a committee. In the Health and Welfare Committee. And this committee was stacked beforehand. The lieutenant governor removed four people that would have voted for it and put in four or six people that he knew was going to vote against it. So the result of this was predetermined a long time ago, or before the session was even called. And it's just double... I really don't understand it. Living here, I'm right in the middle of the Obama derangement syndrome.
Right.
Which should be in the DSM. And I've been contacting my representative, and the last email I got from him started with "you liberals."
Really?
You can imagine what went on from there.
Yeah.
And that's what we're living with here in this state, and it's really disgusting. It, wow. Even though everybody, the majority of people are in favor of it, even the majority of the Republicans were in favor for this version of the ACA. They have to call it Obamacare, of course, because that's the majority for them. And most people are in favor for it. But 280,000 people are going to be without, and thousands of people are going to die, and they don't really care.
Right. Yeah, it's a tough one. And I think it goes beyond that the Republicans don't care. It's I don't see how they cannot know that 280,000 people not having health insurance means that some small percentage of those people are going to die because they don't have health insurance. Some larger small percentage of those people are going to be disabled, crippled, or whatever because they don't have health insurance. And some even larger fraction of those 280,000 people are going to be infectious to everybody else because they don't have health insurance. This is a public health issue as well as a common human decency issue. And the Republicans in Tennessee have completely failed on all counts. Tim, well said. Thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So are the Canadians stampeding to our door? Is there a huge movement in Canada to end single-payer health care or something close to it? Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Anonymous hacktivists are going after ISIS. This is being reported over at anonhq.com, Anonymous's website, and reprinted over at the Democratic Underground. Anonymous has just struck a massive blow against ISIS recruiting efforts. Hacktivists recently took control of dozens of Twitter and Facebook accounts that have been openly used by ISIS to recruit new members and expand their influence. According to the hacktivists, they said, "We are Muslims, Christians, Jews alike. We are hackers, crackers, hacktivists, fishers, agents, spies, or just the guy next door. Students, administrators, workers, clerks, unemployed, rich, poor, young, old, gay, straight, all races, countries, religions, and ethnicity, united as one, divided by zero." And at the very end, they published this video on the ISIS sites that makes the point that the terrorists that are calling themselves Islamic State are not Muslims. And then the anonymous group goes on to say, "We will hunt you, take down your sites, accounts, emails, and expose you. From now on, no safe place for you online. You will be treated like a virus, and we are the cure. We own the internet. We are Anonymous. We are Legion. We do not forgive. We do not forget. Expect us." Wow. Sweet. It's like, you know, at some point, the world... Oh, and by the way, another story that just popped up over at DU is Bernie Sanders has said he's not going to show up for Netanyahu's little speech to the Congress. Good on him. Just amazing that John Boehner would have organized this thing with the Israeli ambassador, who was an acolyte, a student of Frank Luntz. He was a Republican politician in the United States. Grew up in Miami Beach. His brother was the mayor of Miami Beach. His dad was the mayor of Miami Beach. Ron Dermer is his name, And then Bibi Netanyahu decides to choose this guy who's a Republican activist and a student of Frank Luntz to choose him to be the Israel's ambassador to the United States. And what's the first thing he does? He goes and hatches this scheme with John Boehner to make the Democrats look bad and make the president look bad. And it looks like it's really the main thing it's accomplishing is making Bibi Netanyahu look bad, which is unfortunate. I mean, it's revealing that the current Israeli administration, the Netanyahu administration, is perfectly willing to involve itself in U.S. domestic American politics for their own purposes, which is something that any country doing that should horrify Americans. Catherine in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Catherine, what's on your mind today?
What's on my mind is I've got a little news for the people in Tennessee. We have
an organization called PersuasionPartners.com,
mm-hmm.
turning blue states to red. And their hands are a lot of their, in their client list, are a lot of legislators in Tennessee, and then a lot here. And here it's even including Americans for Prosperity.
Here in Wisconsin.
So if you go to PersuasionPartners.com, you can read about it. And then if you Google Wisconsin's Karl Rove, you'll come up with the article about the gentleman, and you will see his name and face. It turns out he's been doing this since 2005 here. They do a lot of mail campaigns, and they actually, you can go online when you go to that site, and you can see exactly the different types of pieces of mail that they send out and what they call them. And they're called things like sheep and X, and sheep, X, award-winning piece, sheep's clothing, rock star, record book, missing baby, distorted vision, arm and leg, five reasons, twins, rubber stamp, reset button, question, flags, apples and oranges, and you can see each of their campaign cards that they've sent out. And I think they've been probably some of the things that have really turned people and lost us elections.
Hmm. Remarkable. Are they funded by the Koch brothers?
Well, you see, this gentleman owns it who lives here in Madison, and I think there was a reference to somebody or something. I wouldn't be surprised, but it's not easy to find out whether or not they are. But you can read the case studies of how they got Ron Johnson for Senate, Bill Haslam for governor, so that's Tennessee, and Sean Duffy for Congress. I mean, it's an amazing little website, so that's PersuasionPartners.com, and I think all our Tennessean friends should go take a look at that.
I will
and
check
I think
it out.
We should steal some of the ideas.
Yeah, there you go. Well, this is, you know, like I was saying last Friday, back in 2010, you had the Concord Initiative, which was encouraging Tea Partiers to become precinct committee people in the Republican Party, so that they could appoint Tea Party Republican primary candidates, so that eventually you'd have Congress full of Tea Partiers. And they were successful, and Democrats should be doing the same thing with the Democratic Party. I'm with you. Catherine, thank you for sharing the story. That's amazing. Ron in Spokane, Washington. Hey, Ron, you wanted to get back to Canadian healthcare system?
Yeah, Tom, it's good talking to you again.
Thank you.
Living here near the Canadian border, I get to run into a lot of Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the number one questions I ask them is, what do you feel about your healthcare systems? And I asked him, if you could get rid of your health care system, come to the U.S. and have ours. None of them want to come here to get our health care. In fact, overwhelmingly I hear from them, it's not only do you pay the premiums, it's your huge deductibles you've got to pay.
Right.
So,
yeah, in Canada, the most that you pay is, what is it, $140 a month, I think, is what the provincial average. Because you actually buy the health insurance from the government. And I think you pay $140 a month to the average income family. It's you know, if you're low income, it costs less. If you're high income, it costs a little bit more. So it's sort of like a progressive income tax. Do I have that right, Ron?
Yeah, it is. And then what happens is, like here in our country, you pay your premiums, and then you go to the hospital, and let's say the hospital visit, your first 2 days in the hospital, you pay the first $500 of those days.
Right.
So you get double whammied here, is where they have no deductibles for anything there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've been through this recently. Both Louise and I have had surgery in the last couple of years. Well, it was 2 or 3 years ago, but and you know, I'm very fortunate that throughout my life I've had some success in business and I have a little bit of money in the bank. But you know, ending up with $10,000-$20,000 in copay and hospital bills and non covered by your insurance company, whatnot, that would break a lot of people. I mean, it would just break a lot of people. And it's just it's wrong. And in Canada, they don't have to worry about that. 50% of all bankruptcies in the United States are because somebody got sick. That does not happen in any other developed country in the world. And it is just wrong. Ron, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hi, good afternoon, Tom.
Hello, Charles.
I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you.
I got a call in, and I don't know if you can remember. But I have called you in the past, and I was saying that I'm actually protesting or against anyone sending monies to, I guess, the Sunday morning preachers.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got offended only because I am a Christian. And I was wondering, you know, if you have people in the position that, you know, that could influence so many other Christians, like these preachers, you know, why aren't they, or why haven't anyone made the attempt to say, well, let's extend the olive branch to the White House and let's try to bring this country together.
Right.
And it's like a big joke, because once Rush Limbaugh got on television, well, he's been saying it on his radio show, but once I saw him on television and he actually said that he was against, they were at war with the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. You know, it just made me realize that they're all hand in hand. And, you know, it just shows that with these Tea Parties coming into power, that we're not only fighting people from the Middle East, we really are fighting right-wing, terrorist organization, which is now the GOP, and which conservatives are backing. They're not using bullets, but they're using the pen. You know, they've stopped Obama on mostly everything that we wanted to do economically, and they're still trying to destroy Obamacare, which has took so many millions of people, you know, to the point where they didn't have health care. Now they do have health care, and they're trying to jeopardize that as well.
Right. So, yeah. No, I'm with you, Charles. I wouldn't call them right-wing terrorists. I think that's too strong a word. But, there is a right-wing conspiracy. You know, Hillary Clinton was right. There's a vast right-wing conspiracy. It's huge. It's well-funded. It's got lots and lots of tentacles and arms and media outlets and voices and whatnot. And that vast right-wing conspiracy, as it were, is working really, really hard to create serfdom in the United States. I mean, it's all about the money.
It's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about the money, and this is what they want. They want to own everything. The small group of cranky right wing billionaires. They want to own everything, and they basically, you know, hey, you're poor, you're sick. Survival of the fittest means we're going to weed you out of the gene pool. Charles, thanks for the call. It's just this is how bad it is. This is how far it's gone. That you've got billionaires, the Koch brothers, and their buddies who are funding America for Prosperity, who are looking at Tennessee, at a Republican governor and a Republican legislature who want to expand Medicaid so the 280,000 poor working Tennesseans. All of them are working. If you don't work in Tennessee, if your income is zero, you actually qualify for state-based Medicaid. But the working poor, they got nothing. And these billionaires are saying that's fine.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The message of Americans for Prosperity and the Koch brothers, basically, hey, I got mine. Screw the poor people. Welcome back. Cliff in Claremore, Oklahoma. Hey, Cliff, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, this thing you guys were talking about regarding health care and also regarding the religious right, I pretty much did narrow it down to this, is that in the final days there will be deceivers. And I mean, I know I sound like I'm preaching the Bible, but really, when you stop and think of it, that's what the right are about. Are there deceivers? They're trying to use religion to bludgeon people.
Yeah.
And this thing about the Koch brothers, quite frankly, they may not be the Antichrist, but they certainly are the minions of the devil, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm reluctant to religiously characterize any individual, but I do believe that harm is being done to our country.
Right.
Not just by the Koch brothers, but by an entire right-wing machine that seeks to put profit and the so-called marketplace above human decency and democracy and the will of the people. And it concerns me greatly. I'm with you. Cliff, thank you for the call. Good, great comment. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta, what's on your mind?
Hey there, Tom.
Hey.
I don't know if you recall, we had a conversation about three months ago or so, and you were kind enough to tell me about a time when you were working at a radio station in Michigan, and you listened to a Dick Gregory record, and we had this conversation about how insidious racism is in the language.
Yep.
And I wanted to kind of pick up on that with regard to what you were talking about earlier about the president. So while you were talking, I decided to go ahead and do a search on pictures of Satan. And do you know that almost all depictions of Bible characters are white, and the only character depicted with brown skin, sometimes orange, is Satan? Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because referring to Obama as the Antichrist, I believe is an extension of this. This whole terrorist thing is really about racism. When you look at Richard Reed, he's called a shoebox bomber. Ted Kaczynski's called the Unabomber. Tim McVeigh's called the Oklahoma City bomber. So it's clearly not the act that makes you a terrorist. It's what you look like. It's the person. Hmm. That's what it seems to be to me.
Wow.
What are your thoughts?
Benefits of white privilege is that white people don't tend to sit around and think about racial stuff and don't tend to notice things like what you just described although it's interesting. I spoke at a conference in Los Angeles on Saturday, and I was walking around the conference with a couple of friends of mine, Marianne Williamson and Richard Green. There was a place that was selling pictures of Jesus, all these different Jesuses. It was like 30 or 40 of them, you know, with halos, and it was all kind of new agey. Every single one of them was a European Caucasian Jesus. And we're looking at this going, I don't think Jesus looked like this. You know, what's the deal? The idea that Christians typically characterize Satan as a person of color, yeah, it makes perfect sense. In fact, up until about 20 years ago, the official position of the Mormon Church was that the mark of Cain, you know, God said, or the Bible, Genesis says, God put a mark on Cain's forehead so that wherever he went, because he murdered his brother Abel, so that wherever he went, whatever country he went to, people could identify him and curse him. And the official position of the Mormon Church up until just 20 years ago or thereabouts was that that's black skin. And that's why they didn't allow African Americans into the church. So Kenyatta, good on you. Thank you for sharing that with us. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And at goatsfortheoldgoat.com, in time for Valentine's Day, Ellen she personally out of her own pocket, buys these Swarovski crystal glass beads and takes them over to South Sudan herself and gives them to these women who have seen someone killed in front of them. And this is their PTSD therapy, is making this jewelry. And they are available over at Ellen's website, goodsfortheoldgoat.com. Victoria Jones is with us. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. And they're very beautiful.
They are, yeah.
Very beautiful.
Louise has several, and she loves wearing them. And they come in different colors, too.
They're lovely.
Yeah.
Well, keeping with Valentine's Day, I will start with our light story, because otherwise we never get to them, as I give you our report, and I'm speaking very clearly, because a massive poll of more than 11,000 people in 24 global cities by the Time Out Global Dating Survey showed that the British accent was preferred by people around the world as the most attractive accent.
It certainly works in the United States. I mean, all you have to do to cause people to think that you're thoughtful, erudite, well-educated,
indeed,
is speak with a British accent.
No question. But it's preferred in dating.
Wow.
Allegedly.
Wow.
That's what this, that's clearly.
So how do I learn to talk like, well, actually, I don't need to date anybody, but how do people who might want to be looking for a partner learn to talk like you?
It's very difficult. I don't know if you've noticed how hard it is for Americans to do a British accent.
Yeah.
It's a very hard accent to do. Obviously, go watch a lot of Downton Abbey.
Okay. And don't tell Adam Schrock.
No. That's what you do. Okay. I've just come within the last 45 minutes or so from a joint press conference of President Barack Obama and German Chancellor Angela Merkel in the East Room of the White House, in which they touched on a number of issues. But the primary issue was Ukraine. Angela Merkel visiting President Obama today for talks. And Germany, France, and Ukraine and Russia are scheduled to get together on Wednesday for talks following a joint phone call yesterday. President Obama said the U.S. is examining all options for aiding Ukraine, including supplying defensive weapons, if the latest round of diplomatic efforts fails to bring a resolution with Russia. But Merkel was emphasizing, though, that you keep trying. That's what the point that she kept saying was, that you keep trying, you know, as you do with the Middle East peace talks. You keep trying diplomacy because you just never know what's going to work. And he made the same point. He also said both Angela and I have emphasized the prospect for a military solution to this problem has always been low. She said that success at the Wednesday summit, quote, is anything but certain. Foreign ministers met today, and even though they did agree to EU foreign ministers met today and agreed to delay an expansion of sanctions against Russia in a bid to give a chance for a new round of truce talks to take effect. The meeting on Wednesday is in Minsk in Belarus, which is where the previous peace plan came together, a peace plan that has been more observed in its breach than in anything else. The peace plan that they're discussing has been kept remarkably close. Almost nothing is known about it. I mean, I haven't seen any news outlets with anything. One thing the BBC has is it's thought to include a demilitarized zone of about 31 to 44 miles around the current front lines of fighting. That's about all that I've seen. But it's everybody is very keen to try and move things along at this point because of increased fighting. So that there's hope that the talks will lead to something on Wednesday.
I sure hope so. This has the potential to spark World War III if it's played wrong.
There's real concern, and there's a lot of pressure on the president, which he's resisting, from members of Congress, bipartisan pressure, because there was a joint press conference last week of 12 members of Congress, and I think it was six and six, Republican and Democrat, pushing for defensive weapons for Ukraine. In Alabama, the 37th state to legalize gay marriage, amid conflicting signals from federal courts and the Chief Justice of Alabama's Supreme Court, some Alabama counties today did begin granting marriage licenses. But it's a bit confusing because Sunday night, the state's Chief Justice, Roy Moore, sent an order to county probate judges telling them not to issue licenses in defiance of a federal district court ruling that's being appealed by the state. But by this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to stay a district court order pending the outcome of that appeal. In other words, go ahead.
Go ahead and issue gay marriage licenses.
Go ahead and issue gay marriage licenses, but not every county is doing so.
Interesting. You know, this is – wasn't George Wallace from Alabama?
George Wallace is from Alabama.
So,
that is correct.
Yeah, so back when Bobby Kennedy, Attorney General Bobby Kennedy, said you must integrate, George Wallace said, you know, segregation then, segregation now, segregation forever, we will never integrate. Now Judge Moore – is saying is essentially the same thing. We will not integrate gay people into the mainstream of married folks in the state of Alabama. It's bizarre.
That's very much how the New York Times is writing this piece.
Wow.
Yeah, very, very much. I mean, for example, the small town of Troy in Pike County, they are having no marriages at all today.
Right, just to avoid the conflict.
Avoid
or the debate?
It, yes.
Amazing.
Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, said today that he would not attend Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech to Congress next month,
Right. Adding
to other Democrats and now an independent who won't go.
Now, there are voices out of Israel suggesting that Bibi Netanyahu got snookered by John Boehner, but it seems to me that it was Ron Dermer, their ambassador. What's the latest on this? Did Netanyahu really not know that the president hadn't been notified that they were negotiating with Boehner?
It's not clear, but the latest is that they're saying that there are discussions for him to either give it to a closed-door session or to AIPAC.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, AIPAC, that's a reasonable kind of face-saving thing. Amazing. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, votesfortheoldgoat.com. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Always great to see you. We will be back. It's 2 minutes before the top of the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Amazing stuff going on out there in the world. A couple of different things that I want to talk about that may seem like disconnected from each other, but I really think they're all part of one large whole. Let's start with Rand Paul and Glenn Beck. Rand Paul, you know, of course, said on nationally televised in a nationally televised interview that he had seen or he had heard stories of, I guess, kids who got vaccines and instantly turned into neurological basket cases. I'm paraphrasing. There is this measles outbreak going on in the United States. You've got a couple hundred kids or in some cases even adults who are getting measles, and measles can be nasty stuff. So what's causing it? Well, a Republican narrative has emerged. And the Republican narrative is, as Glenn Beck said, in fact, I'll just quote him. He says basically this measles outbreak is a hoax. And he proves it by reading this piece from a right-wing website. As Beck told it, quote, if you look at the 102 children in California who have been detected with measles, you look at where they came from, you see that the two cases came from, one, an Amish community, and two, a group of travelers who entered the U.S. and the Philippines. If you eliminate these two sources, there is no uptrend in measles. Well, sort of. I mean, this goes into what Abraham Lincoln used to say about figures don't lie, but liars can figure. A group of Amish people who are not vaccinated went to the Philippines. I'm not sure why, but they did. And when they came back, a couple of them had measles. And they seem to be one of the major sources for this measles outbreak. But they were Americans, Amish Americans. Now, the drumbeat, the implication of what Glenn Beck said, and he's not the only one. This is all over, you know, right-wing hate radio and on Fox hate, so-called news. Fox hate talk news, I guess we should call it, is that it's foreigners, implying or suggesting somehow that it's foreigners, you know, coming across the southern border. Oh, my God, it must be those illegal immigrants from South America. Look at all these Guatemalans. Wait a minute, they have a national health care system there? All their kids are vaccinated? Oh, didn't know that. Yeah, no, it's no measles coming from south of the border. But the Philippines don't have a national health care system. They do have measles. And when unvaccinated Americans go there, they can bring measles back. And it's not just the Philippines. There's measles all over the world. Which doesn't build a strong argument for ending tourist visas or immigration, because A, these were Americans. These were not immigrants. They were tourists. These were Americans who went to the Philippines, whether they went there for medical care, whether they went there for vacation, whether they went there to be evangelists. I don't know, but whatever. You got a couple of Amish who went to the Philippines and came back with measles. So what are we supposed to do? End all tourist visas for Americans? Say, hey, if you're an American, you can't travel anywhere in the world. This is, by the way, the Centers for Disease Control had this to say. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has established this as a separate outbreak from the current cases spreading from California. Within this mistaken explanation, Beck got more facts wrong. There was no Filipino family that traveled to the U.S. that infected Amish people. Rather, unvaccinated Amish missionaries traveled to the Philippines and brought the disease back to Ohio last year. And this is a separate measles outbreak from the one that happened in California around Disneyland, apparently. So, number one. Number two, today is the six-month anniversary of the murder, and I use that word advisedly, of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. Now, I don't know if it's going to be commemorated in Ferguson, if there's going to be demonstrations or protests, but one of the things that the murder of Michael Brown has brought out is how small towns across the United States, particularly small towns where you've got a largely black population and a largely white power structure, have turned their largely black population, although it's not always just African Americans. I mean, it could just be a poor population. The way that they extract money from these folks is with these parking tickets and things that then people don't show up in court, and as a consequence of not showing up in court, they are now, you know, eligible to be arrested, and thus you have debtor's prison. And here's this piece from today's New York Times by Monica Davey. There are two lawsuits now, both of them in Missouri, one of them in Ferguson, the other in another St. Louis suburb called Jennings. And this from the New York Times article starts out telling the story of Herbert Nelson Jr. He's an African-American living in Ferguson, Missouri. He was 18 years old the first time the police pulled him over. He got a speeding ticket. He thought, this is no big deal. But more and more, he got more and more tickets. And then he didn't have any money, so he didn't show up in court to pay the fine. And when he didn't show up in court, they issued arrest warrants for him. So Mr. Nelson, now 26, has found himself repeatedly jailed in the St. Louis suburb, writes Monica Davey in the New York Times, and in a maze of municipalities nearby, part of a pattern that black residents have complained has grown all too common. I live a normal life, he says. I've got a son. I'm not a bad person. I just don't have the money to pay for all this. Mr. Nelson, who paints buildings but is out of work, is among 15 residents of the St. Louis region who filed two lawsuits on Sunday evening, one against Ferguson, one against Jennings. And as Monica Davey writes, they allege that the cities have created an unconstitutional, modern-day debtor's prison, putting impoverished people behind bars in overcrowded, unlawful, and unsanitary conditions with walls streaked with dirt, mucus, and feces. In the Jennings jail, two suicides have been reported since 2013. The purpose of the tickets and jailings, the lawsuit suggests, has been largely financial, to raise revenue to keep these tiny St. Louis counties afloat, these municipalities afloat. Mr. Nelson, he's 26 now, he has a 23-year-old sister, Allison Nelson. She says, and I quote, this same New York Times article, anytime I go outside, I fear that I'll be stopped by the police. She got her first traffic ticket, by the way, when she was 18 years old. She has since been held in lockups that she's described as filthy and smelling of mold, sewage, and sweat. Once she said she was arrested outside her family's home while still in her nightgown. Miss Nelson said, you drive to work so you can pay the fines, but then you get pulled over so you owe even more. She makes $7.75 an hour at a clothing store. She wanted to join the Navy, but you can't join the Navy when you've got all these criminal charges against you. In fact, in Ferguson, which has a population of 21,000, for every 1,000 people in Ferguson, there are 1,500 arrest warrants. You get that? 21,000 people, over 30,000 arrest warrants. This is like, you know, the white power structure of this town has turned pretty much everybody in the town into a criminal. This is so wrong. you know, this and the idea that if you don't pay your tickets or if you don't show up in court, you go to jail. And then on top of that, they can confiscate your car. They can confiscate your home. In fact, they do routinely. And now you have to prove your innocence, which flips our system of justice on its head. They don't have to prove your guilt. You have to prove your innocence. And then you have to petition to get your stuff back, which only happens about 10% of the time, even for completely innocent people. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to decide whether Scott Walker's voter suppression scheme is constitutional. I'll tell you about that after the break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, and did I mention Sam Brownback? We'll be back. Welcome back. Quirky in Rochester, New York, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Quirky, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Good to hear from you again.
Thank you. Back at you.
You don't speak Fox very well, do you? The guy you had on with all the countries and their health care system.
Right.
What he's saying is those damn poor people getting ahead of line, ahead of people with money, and that's why they have such a problem.
Right.
He don't tell you how many people died from waiting. He don't tell you how many people were put further back in line because they had an ingrown toenail.
Right.
I mean, it's just all geared toward money.
Yeah. Well, he did have one study that was done by a right-wing think tank that suggested that as many as 40,000 people might die because of the waiting period over a 16-year period, whereas here in the United States, we have 40,000 people a year dying simply because they have no access to health insurance. They don't have Medicaid. They got nothing.
Well, Rumsfeld had those figures before we went to war, how many guys might die in an invasion of Iraq. So,
right.
You know, might have and is fact is two different things.
Yeah.
And then for all those Christians, I mean, President Obama went all the way back to the Crusades. But you don't have to go that far back. All you have to go back is to the beginning of this country, the 9 million Indians that were murdered or killed. They were infected, their blankets with smallpox, and our brothers that came over from Africa. 6 million of them died in transfer. Now, if this is your God and your religion, I strongly suggest that you keep it.
Yeah.
And keep it in your house where it belongs.
Christianity was used to justify slavery, but we didn't call slave owners Christian terrorists. Christianity was used to justify the slaughter of Native Americans. You're absolutely right, Corky. And we didn't call ourselves Christian terrorists. Although I suspect many Native Americans might at least think of us as terrorists. But you're absolutely right. And the other thing that President Obama didn't say, which he could have said, and I suspect he didn't because of the color of his skin, because it would have been just, you know, catnip for the right, hard right, is that we still have Christian terrorists in the United States. They call themselves the Ku Klux Klan.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I mean, today, right this minute, there are Klan members in the United States who are you know, sitting around trying to figure out ways to terrorize black people and gay people and in some cases Jews and Catholics.
Yes. If you don't believe the way I believe, you're a terrorist.
Right.
That's how it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the old saying, one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter is so true. The British called us terrorists. King George III called George Washington a terrorist.
Yes.
How dare we shoot at them without standing in formation? We shot from behind trees. He called us cowards. Cowards and terrorists.
Yes. When you kill people with drones, you just make more terrorists.
I agree. Well, and they would argue that you are a terrorist if you're killing people with drones. That is, you know, certainly terrorizing large populations. I mean, if you know that you go outside and you just may get vaporized, can you imagine the amount of trauma, PTSD, of just, you know, horrible recollection and experience people who have been around drone strikes must carry for the rest of their lives? It's amazing. And war is hell. It really is hell. And George W. Bush opened the gates of hell. Corky, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. 20 minutes past the hour. hour. Tom Hartman here with you, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Oh, hi, how you doing? Oh, I just wanted to say, with regards to your guest who was talking about comparing the healthcare systems, I would like to say that I've known personally a couple of Canadians who came to the United States and were able to compare the healthcare systems, being on the recipients of it or as beneficiaries of it. You know, they were pretty shocked at the American system after I think your guest seemed to have this attitude that the people are too stupid to know what's good for them. You know, some elite has to decide for them, you know, and that the Canadians like their healthcare system doesn't have any bearing on the fact that it's bad or some such thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I think I had to wait a year for a hernia operation. Of course, that was on a state funded level, but which was cut so much by 2012 I was actually lucky. I might would have had to wait for a year and a half had I not met a doctor who.
Mark, we just lost you, but you know, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it rather concerned me, but you know, when Louise was diagnosed with breast cancer, she had to wait a few weeks for surgery. And I'm like, wait a minute, they just did a biopsy. They just put a needle inside this tumor. And so presumably those cancer cells could be spreading all over her body and they're waiting to do the surgery? Really? Well, yeah, we've got systems and programs and it's got to be in line. And I mean, it wasn't a long wait, but it was still, it's just that this is nuts. Kevin in Long Beach, California. Hey, Kevin. Kevin watching Free Speech TV and on DirecTV in Long Beach, California. You are on the air, Kevin. You need to listen to your phone, not your TV, because there's a delay on the TV. Carrie in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Carrie, what's up?
Hey there, how you doing? I was going to say I'm kind of amazed by a couple of things that President Obama said, the prayer breakfast and the State of the Union address.
Uh-huh.
You know, he said that, ISIS, take Boko Haram. They kidnapped 400 girls. They killed 2,000 people about a month ago.
Right. He called them a death cult.
He said, well, that's okay because, you know, the Christians had slavery.
Wait a minute, Kerry. Where did you hear this? Was this on Fox News?
No. This is what he said during the – he said slavery.
I listened to what he said during the prayer breakfast, and he never said that's okay.
No, he never said okay.
What kind of horrible misrepresentation is that? Why would you say that, Kerry?
Isn't that what he was doing? They burned a pilot, but the Christians used to burn people back when, in the way of the Bible.
He said
that they used the Bible.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Kerry, let me just fill you in, Kerry. Maybe you didn't hear the opening of the show. These terrorists, the Boko Haram, ISIS, and Al-Qaeda, and a half a dozen other little splinter groups with funny names, they desperately want to be considered credible and legitimate. And the claim that they make to credibility and legitimacy is that they are fulfilling the tenets of Islam, that they are true Muslims and everybody else isn't. And the folks who call them Islamic terrorists are certifying them as legitimate. They're giving them the legitimacy that they are craving and begging for. And so when Fox News and person after person after person on Fox News says, you know, these are Islamic terrorists, why won't the president call them Islamic terrorists? Fox News is doing the work of ISIS. You, Kerry, if your condemnation of the president is that he won't call ISIS a Muslim group, you are helping ISIS.
Not what I'm saying.
Okay, what are you saying?
I'm saying when ISIS lines up all the men in the town, machine guns them, take all the young boys and bury them, take the girls, rape them, or put them on crosses and crucify them. And then President Obama said, but the Christians 1,000 years ago.
He didn't say, but, Kerry, stop.
Okay.
You know, what the president was saying is absolutely true. Boko Haram, ISIS, these guys, they're death cults. They are not Muslim terrorists. They are just criminal idiot terrorists, just like when the Catholics marched off in the 13th century to Jerusalem to try to capture Jerusalem in the Crusades, that wasn't Christian terrorism. I mean, arguably they claimed Christ, but I don't think anybody would say that that's something that Christ would have advocated doing. Just like very few people want to call the Ku Klux Klan Christian terrorists, and nobody wants to call Eric Rudolph, the abortion clinic bomber and the bomber of the Olympic Games. They don't want to call him a Christian terrorist. It adds legitimacy to people to call them to say that they're associated with one of the world's great religions. The president is dissing ISIS. You are elevating ISIS, Kerry. I don't understand why you would want to promote ISIS. Why do you want to promote ISIS and Boko Haram?
He wants to promote ISIS. That's the question.
Why are you promoting ISIS?
You understand what I'm saying. Why did
I understand that the president called them a death cult and murderous thugs, and you want them to be called part of one of the world's great religions. Why? Why are you doing ISIS's work for them?
He was saying just like Christians, wasn't he?
No, he was not. He was saying horrible things have been done in the name of Christianity. Horrible things are being done in the name of Islam. It does not mean that those people were Christians, and it does not mean that these people are Muslims. Kerry, what's so complex about that you can't figure it out?
Doesn't it seem like he's comparing it?
He's comparing two crimes done in the name of religion and saying neither one of these have anything to do with their religions. Is that not true?
Well, why would he bring it up that way?
Because people do things in the name of religion, horrible things in the name of a religion, and his whole point was they should not have the right to claim that that's their religion. Christians today repudiate the Crusades. Most Muslims around the world repudiate ISIS and Boko Haram, and the day will come when they look back on those people the same way we look back on the Crusades. That is what he was saying, and it was the right thing to say. Fox News notwithstanding, as far as I can tell, outside of hate radio on the right and Fox News and one Drudge report, pretty much everybody understands what I just said, Kerry.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
But be careful when you're arguing with people who've been watching too much Fox News. It's like what Ronald Reagan said. It's what they think they know that's dangerous. Okay, a couple other things that I promised to share with you, and I will do so and then pick up your calls here. Sam Brownback. It's fascinating watching this. You know, Ronald Reagan bought this thing, hook, line, and sinker. George Herbert Walker Bush, not so much. George H.W. Bush in 1980 during the primary against Reagan, they were both running for president, and Bush lost, and so he ended up being the vice president. Or, you know, the Republicans nominated him for, and he became the vice president. George Herbert Walker Bush referred to Reaganomics as voodoo economics. Supply-side economics, this brand-new radical idea that was put forward in the 1980s, in the late 1970s, by, basically a bunch of right-wing crackpots. It was a justification for massive tax cuts on rich people. So, you know, if you're the shill for rich people, or if you are the rich people and you want to have a giant tax cut, because at that point in time, the top tax rate was 74%. Now, only, you know, less than 1% of Americans paid 74%. But that was the top tax rate. So if you want to get that top tax rate cut, you don't go in and say, hey, I'm a rich guy, I want my taxes cut. You say, if we cut taxes on rich people, it will help the economy and everybody will prosper. It's trickle-down economics. Now, in the back rooms, they're sitting around laughing about it, going, yeah, we're going to pee on them and tell them it's raining. But that's what they did. And they sold it to the American people. We bought it hook, line, and sinker, and Reagan dropped the top tax rate from 74% to 28%. And suddenly we had an explosion of billionaires and an explosion of poverty in the United States. 34 years of it. And by the time Reagan's administration was done and he was off into Alzheimer's land, George Herbert Walker Bush was president. And he looked around and he said, this is crazy. And he raised taxes. And, of course, the billionaires got all hysterical and trashed him, and Bill Clinton came in and won in 92. And he raised taxes again. up to 39%, from 35% up to 39%, which is where they are now. I mean, you know, George W. Bush dropped them again, and Obama raised them again, and here we are. But anyhow, the net-net of all this is that pretty much everybody has figured out that Reaganomics is a scam. It's a scam run by rich people on average working people, people who listen to right-wing hate radio, people who listen to Fox so-called hate news. People who listen to this stuff, people who watch this stuff, are the poor suckers in our society. I don't, there's not any other way to say it. Anybody who tells you that if you cut taxes on rich people, it's going to strengthen the middle class, all objective evidence indicates that not only is that not true, but it's the opposite of what is true. And yet, Sam Brownback leaves the United States Senate, runs for governor of the state of Kansas, home to the Koch brothers, and says, hey, let's cut income taxes on the Koch brothers by 29%. And let's exempt all the sub-ass businesses. Koch Industries, by the way, is a sub-ass business. Let's exempt these businesses, 191,000 of them in Kansas, from any tax, or at least any income tax. Oh, and let's cut our spending to schools and state universities by $45 million. And people were sitting around going, okay, you know, we'll go along with that. And let's cut money going to poor people. And the poor people were really upset, but, you know, they tend not to vote. And so Sam Brownback and his Republicans just don't give a rat's patootie. But then yesterday, or maybe it was Friday, Sam Brownback said, oh, you know, we still haven't made up the shortfall. I mean, we're missing hundreds of millions of dollars because the Koch brothers aren't paying taxes now in Kansas, or at least not paying what they used to pay. And not just the Koch brothers. I mean, all the rich people in Kansas. And so he said, let's cut our highway funds. Now, Kansas is a fairly rural state. You got a couple of medium-sized towns, you know, Topeka and I don't know where else. But mostly it's a rural state. And people in rural states get around on the highways. And Kansas has a really nice highway system. It's well-maintained. It's well-funded. Because they used to have an income tax on rich people. So now you've got some Republicans, a little bit of blowback here. This John Hanna, writing for the Associated Press. He says, even a few of the legislature's most austerity-minded members were taken aback by the blow to the highway program, which comes as other states are considering new ways of ramping up infrastructure investment, some by raising taxes. Senator Forrest Knox, state senator in Kansas, one of the most hard right Republicans in the state Senate. He says, and I quote from the AP story, when I send out surveys and say, what are the roles of government? And this is not just my district. Roads are generally at the top of the list. The AP story goes on to say many of Brownback's allies have supported the cuts he's made to cover the revenue lost from his tax expenditures, which dropped the top rate for individuals by 29% and exempted 191,000 business owners altogether. Business owners. See, sub-S corporation means that you're running it as a private corporation and you pay taxes on it on your own personal income taxes. It's amazing. It's just amazing. How long is it going to be before even Republicans wake up? And as George Herbert Walker Bush didn't say, this stuff is just bat guano crazy. It doesn't work. Meanwhile, Scott Walker and his voter suppression efforts are going before the Supreme Court. The case is called Frank v. Walker. It's the Wisconsin voter ID case. And what's interesting is they open the brief that they filed with the Supreme Court, the people who are challenging Scott Walker's voter suppression ID law, with this statement. There is no right more basic in our democracy than the right to participate in electing our political leaders. Sounds great, right? That's the opening line of John Roberts' decision in the McCutcheon case. So John Roberts is saying the most important right we have is the right to vote, or at least the right to participate in the electoral process, In the case of Sean McCutcheon, it means buying as many politicians as you want. So when it comes to rich people buying politicians, John Roberts is all in favor of political participation in the political process. Is he going to be all in favor of participation in the political process when it means that poor people can vote? 9% of people in Wisconsin don't have a driver's license who are eligible to vote, except for the fact that they're not eligible to vote now because they don't have a driver's license. There are people who are retired. They no longer drive. They are people who live downtown. They don't need to drive. They are people who are poor and can't afford a car. They are, stay-at-home housewives. There's this whole spectrum of my mom didn't have a driver's license most of her life. And, you know, by the logic of Scott Walker, such people should not be allowed to vote. This is going before the Supreme Court. Keep an eye on this. This is going to be one of those sleeper cases that's going to have, this Frank case is going to have a lot going on. So keep an eye on this. Jim in Nashville, Tennessee. Boy, we've had, I think you're the fifth or sixth caller from Tennessee today. What's up, Jim?
Well, Tom, because Tennessee has been on the top of the queue, I guess,
yeah,
on today's program, we just moved from North Carolina. And the people here in Tennessee will say, oh, you'll love it. You'll love it. There's no state income tax.
Right.
And I thought, okay, there's no state income tax. And then I found out why. First time I went to a store and I paid 9.5%. in sales tax.
Right. This is how Republican states earn their money. Instead of taxing billionaires on their income, they tax working people on everything they buy.
Exactly. And when I turn to the sales cash, the sales clerk, and I say, "Good Lord, what's going on here?" "Well, we don't have any state income tax." And I said, "Well, don't you realize where the burden then falls? It falls on you and me that are buying stuff, because that rich guy down the street, he's buying the same amount as we are, but he's paying so much less of a percentage." And I get this glazed look come over the face, and I'm thinking, oh, God.
Welcome to Tennessee.
Welcome to Tennessee. So I think every once in a while you say despair is not an option. You've got to hit me with despair is not an option, Tom.
Okay, Jim. Despair is not an option. You got to get active. Hey, you know, I mean that seriously. I strongly suggest that you be part of the process of reinvigorating Democratic Party politics in the state of Tennessee. Show up at the local Democratic Party meeting and find out the lay of the land and see what's involved in becoming a precinct committee person.
Will do, and I'll let you know what happens.
I would love to hear it. Please, after you've shown up, come back and give us a report. And I would say the same to anybody else, but that's marvelous. Jim, good luck.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot for the call. It is a marvelous thing when people decide, instead of complaining, I'm going to do something. Because the ultimate cure for any kind of despair, depression, I mean, you know, I realize there are biological things and there are life circumstances things. But in my experience, both as a human being and as a one-time psychotherapist, the most effective way to overcome many of these conditions is to get active, is to do something, is to show up, is to participate. By action, we just, you know, we energize everything in our bodies and our minds and our souls. We wake ourselves up and we go forward and do that. You know, tag, you're it, right? We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Just out in paperback, The Crash of 2016, and my new book, Death in the Pines. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I think I finally got... it's still going really slow. Got my... I don't know if this is my computer or the... Yeah, okay, here we go. I'm trying to get into the chat room. And which you can find over at TomHartman.com. And I think if I push the next button, yep, there I go. Hi, Sue. Hi, everybody in the chat room. Nice to see you all. Okay, let's pick up some phone calls here. Virginia, watching Free Speech TV in Portland, Oregon on cable. Hey, Virginia, what's on your mind?
Oh, Tom, it took me years to find you in live time again. Hello.
I'm glad you did. Listen, tell others, back please.
Back to Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
my question has been, ever since I heard about how they fund themselves by traffic stops and then bench warrants and then, you know, this thing continues to escalate, is does this police action result in people losing the right to vote in Missouri?
In some cases, yes.
So you've got a large black population, a small white ruling population, and you disenfranchise all the blacks by putting them into the criminal system on some level.
Yeah.
And they can never vote to change the system then.
That's correct.
And I was hearing all the while there was coverage of this, you know, the black people in Ferguson need to vote. Well, maybe they're not allowed to vote.
Yeah, many of them are not. And this is, I mean, this was part of Nixon's Southern strategy, which he then morphed into Nixon's drug war in 1972. And the whole idea of the war on drugs was really, you know, it was a plan to criminalize more poor African Americans so that they would no longer be able to participate in the electoral process. You've got 600,000 ex-felons in Florida, the majority of them being African American. If those people were allowed to vote in Florida, Florida would no longer be a red state.
I have another question for you. I tried to call in last week when you were discussing another topic. Can I
sure.
get with it real quick? The price of oil down to around $40 a barrel. I know it's crept up a little lately.
It's at 52 right
way
now.
Down. Yeah, it's way down. The value of the stock of ExxonMobil and all the other giant oil corporations is based in significant part on their known reserves, which is oil in the ground they have not yet pumped.
Correct.
And they've been able to value it at 110 or 120 or whatever the going price had been. How long do you think the price of oil can stay down before these companies are forced to revalue those holdings, which is going to result in their stock prices going through the basement?
That's a good question. And the other thing that could cause them to have to revalue their stock prices is if the governments of the world get together and say, okay, enough, we're not taking any more of that carbon out of the ground. So these assets that these companies have become what are called stranded assets, and they have to take them off the balance sheets. I don't know how long it's going to take, and I'm not sure how long oil prices are going to remain as low as they are. I would guess probably about 6 months, because, you know, all the guys on the Wall Street, everybody makes money when the price of oil goes down. Everybody makes money when the price of oil goes up. As long as there's movement in, substantial movement in the price of any kind of anything that you can trade, there's a lot of money to be made. So, you know, everybody's trying to figure out what's the big oil play, because the price is going to go up. Do I buy Sanchez Energy? It's this, you know, little oil drilling company whose stock is like down around 10 bucks now, and they spin as high as 30 or 40. Do I buy that, or do I buy ExxonMobil, or what? You know, and it's like, who knows? And plus, you know, there's a certain moral issue about investing in oil stocks. But Virginia, I don't know the answer to your question, but I do think that your analysis of the situation and the formula is accurate. Thank you for the call. Ten minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and Keith in Shorewood, Wisconsin. Hey, Keith, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, first, I want to just make a comment about the despair comment you made before.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk progressives off the ledge all the time. And the point I want to make, I make to them is, you know, this is the way they want you to think. They want you to give up.
Yep.
And so if you do it, you're doing what they want.
Yep. You're right.
So anyhow, back to the so-called Islamic terrorism point that we've been discussing here today. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's been brought up in this program, but I found out a couple weeks ago that only 2% of the terrorist acts in the world have been committed by so-called Islamic terrorists. And so the question is, why are we focusing on that, and why aren't we focusing on the other 98%?
The other 98% of terrorist acts?
Yeah.
I mean, according to FBI statistics, you've got there have been, over the last couple of decades, there have been more acts of terrorism in the United States committed by Christians, by Jews, and by Puerto Ricans. The Puerto Rican separatist movement has actually been responsible for a number of terrorist actions as well. And, you know, Muslims are not at the top of that list, other than the bulge that 9/11 created.
Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, thanks a lot. Enjoy your Monday.
Yeah, good. Thank you. You too, Keith. Good point. Jay in Roanoke, Virginia. Hey, Jay, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Tom. I would like to ask you, have you ever asked a Republican what would Jesus do?
I don't know if I have or not. I don't remember.
I mean, don't you think it's a good question to ask them, what would Jesus do?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I have asked them, you know, who would Jesus deny health care to?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying, I mean.
Yeah. Who would Jesus say, you can't vote? Who would Jesus say, you know, who would Jesus say, hey, you can't go to the doctor to? Who would Jesus say, no, you can't have food stamps to?
Yeah.
And, you know, who would Jesus say, no, you can't have, you know, Section 9 housing? I mean, it's just, it's, yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question, Jay, and I'll hold it in reserve for the next Republican who comes on. Thank you for that. Richard in Evanston, Illinois. Hey, Richard.
Hi. Hey, you covered a lot of things. You know, one of the things you mentioned, I really wanted to mention the Inquisition, the pogroms, the blood libel, and the Protestants who had to come to America to found the country to escape Christian religious persecution to, you know, the mix of things. I mean, the Inquisition went on for hundreds of years. Pogroms throughout, you know, Europe.
Yeah.
And blood libel went on from 1100 to 1900. And these are all things that were, you know, that are, again, not Muslims doing it, you know. But the other one was you talk about the...
Wait a second. What blood libel? Isn't that a slur that's used against Jews?
Yes. Yeah, it started in 1100 in Ireland. The last one was in Germany.
Where the Christians were accusing Jews of using Christian blood in their rituals and things?
Yeah.
Okay, so this was a justification for killing Jews.
Yeah.
Got it.
And Inquisition, too. You know, Inquisition is huge. You know,
yeah.
The Dominicans doing that.
Yeah.
But the other, you know, everybody who thinks that trickle-down works, you know, if you graph the increases of worth of rich people and corporations, and you put on that graph how the middle class is done, I mean, I'm still waiting to get trickle-down on. I mean, the rich and corporations are sitting on trillions of dollars right now.
Yep.
Unused.
Yep. Yep.
And so, you know, I mean, so anybody who still holds that as an idea, I mean, you just look at today, what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and the last one, you know, the stranded assets. Remember the oil depletion tax of the 60s?
Yeah. Oil depletion allowance, yes.
Yeah, and they got rid of that, you know, and they got rid of all the people who voted against it, too, by the time Humphrey came into being. But this the stranded assets, you know, a lot of these assets are sitting on leased land, you know, from the government.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so how did they get to write this off? You know, why can't we write sand off because we make glass?
Right. Well, you have to understand the economics of the oil industry. They internalize the profits and they socialize or externalize the costs. And,
well, they get the government writes the laws for them.
Yeah.
I mean, who else gets that kind of stuff?
Well, this is what Henry Wallace was talking about on April 9th, 1944, when he wrote that piece for the New York Times, was, you know, they want to control government because government controls the rules of the marketplace, and using the power of the marketplace and the power of government together, they can keep the working man in eternal subjection. And that is the end game. Richard, thank you for the call. Ken in Mount Prospect, Illinois. Hey, Ken. Traffic tickets? Ken? Listening to WCPT? Ken's not there. Tracy in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Tracy. Thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Hi. I was calling about the other caller that was commenting on the prayer breakfast, who accused Obama of accusing Christians of terrorism and everything.
Right.
And my point about that just goes to show how our educational system has failed us. Because in order for you to be a Ku Klux Klan member, you had to be Christian.
Right.
That's number one. So you had to say, I'm a Christian, and I am willing to burn, lynch, and hang black people. And as far as that guy saying, you know, they didn't go into town, oh, yes. What is Rose with all these different terrorist acts against blacks in the 1920s and the early 1900s?
It's still going on right now.
And I'm about to say, even now. But it's just, and you listen, and then I listened to the other guy that was calling in who mentioned that he was when he moved to Tennessee, and he mentions to the woman, wow, the taxes here are so high. Don't you know it affects you and I? And she has no clue. That goes to show that what the GOP is doing right now, we thought we were stupid before. We're getting ready to really become dumb because they're taking money from education. They're not.
Yeah.
We understand the rhetoric, but we don't understand how that rhetoric works. When you say this is my government, it means you have to be active. You have to go out there and vote. And I'm so sick and tired of people. You know, our congressmen are supposed to be fighting for us, people are fighting for them.
Yeah.
We had a woman here in Michigan that got into a fight with another woman with a slow cooker.
Wow.
Slow cooker.
Tracy, thank you for the call. And I share your outrage. Thank you very much. It's great to hear from you. And thanks for listening to Sirius. We'll be back tomorrow with another, you know, rock and roll day of fascinating talk radio and the news of the day and the events of the day. But don't forget, in the midst of all of this, without you actually getting active and doing something, we will not have an enduring Democratic Republic. It ain't going to happen. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.